We're good?
Good.
Awesome.
Good, good.
Excited. Huh? I think so. It's recording. Yes. Cool. Okay. Welcome, everyone, to an episode of the Palaver Podcast. I have probably the most special guest on. I have to hype him a little bit. He's a bit nervous, but I think we're good.
Yeah, we're good.
So my husband, Sam, is on the podcast as part of the Mixed Feelings episode. I wanted to delve into our relationship as an interracial couple and some of the experiences we've had. But before we sort of get into that, I'm going to do a little bit on my segment about where I've been and talk about Lagos. And the reason I've picked Nigeria and Lagos is because it's one of Sam's favorite countries and cities. And so I just want to talk about what we think about Lagos and Nigeria and what we love about it, because it gets such a bad rap. We know. the experience of Nigerians all over the world. But what was your experience like the first time you went to Lagos? Like, what did you love about it?
It was amazing. I mean, I've always gone to Lagos just to literally up the ante, if you will, on the social side, to parties, to see friends. So it's never been work-related for me. But the first time I got to Lagos, I was like, oh, shit, this reminds me of New York City. Mm-hmm. For me, it is Africa's New York City, right? It has a lot of things in common with New York City in terms of just the geographical nature of it, right? A bunch of New York is five boroughs connected by bridges, trains, what have you, lots of water. Lagos has the same type of thing, right? Yeah. And then there's just the energy, you know, it's just vibrant. People are always on the move, on the go, hustling, trying to make ends meet, right? They just don't stop. Raining and there's somebody still on the street corner with a generator set up, charging devices, shitload of money. People are bawling, you know, it just reminds me so much of New York. Restaurants, just a lot to do, very good vibe. So
I love Lagos. My experience is slightly opposite to yours, because I've gone mainly for work. But even then, it's just fast paced, and like, you have to have the energy, you have to match their energy, you have to be aggressive. It really like, you have to really dig deep to function. But then you come back to wherever else you're going, in my case, and in our case, Ghana, and then you're like, it's a bit slow here, isn't it? It's like people need to like move.
Yeah,
I love Lagos. I think if anyone has the opportunity to go to Nigeria, I think go and experience it for yourself. The people are incredible. They are so, so hardworking, so dynamic, so interesting. They really like to push the boundaries. Yep. They're always kind of on the front of something. The way they support each other as Nigerians when they're doing stuff, it's like Nigeria first. It's, I don't care if I don't like you, you're Nigerian. And so, you know, they kind of push. So I shout out to the Nigerians, because they really just
got that confidence. They come to the table.
They just come like ready.
You know, brimming with confidence. Like, we are here and we deserve to be here.
Yeah.
And you know what? You don't want us here? Forget it. We'll bring our own table. Shit.
Yeah, exactly. We'll, and they'll bring the ourselves. Money. They got the money, so they don't need
We'll make it happen for ourselves. We don't need you. I like that about Nigerians.
Yeah, but, I like that. I like that vibe for sure. So yeah, that's where I've been, and I definitely encourage people to go. That's where, you know, we've been, and I think we're always having this conversation about if we can recommend going to Nigeria. We always recommend it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we still haven't been together, but that's in the works.
On the list. So before we get into our conversation, give us a bit of background about you and your name, because I realize no one knows your name.
Sam Arthur, Ghanaian, born in Ghana, lived here for quite a bit. Went to the UK briefly, came back. This was in the primary school years. Attended boarding school here in Fanspim, and then moved to the US. Stayed there for just over 17 years.
Okay.
And then moved back to Ghana in March 2012.
Yeah. And you were in which part of the US for college?
So undergrad was in Charlotte, North Carolina, UNC Charlotte.
Yeah.
And then grad school went to GW in DC.
Yeah.
Finished that and then moved to New York in January 2000.
Yeah. And what was, like, coming from Ghana, you're like 20, and then you moved to the US. What was that like culturally?
It was very different from what I had expected, right? I mean, back then, my only reference point was music videos, right?
Oh my gosh. Did you think people were
music videos? So everybody's having a grand time. You know, you got chicks all over, nice whips. Everybody's having a really grand time.
Yeah.
And I got to the US into DC in December 94, mm-hmm. you know, so it's winter time, it's gloomy, and I'm in the airport, you know, going through like immigration or whatever, mm-hmm. and I'm looking around like, where the shorties at? Like, where they at? Like, where are the hot chicks? Like, what's going on, people? Like,
this is not the America that
this is not what I envisaged. And then spent about a week or two, I think, at my uncle's in Virginia. And then went down to Charlotte, North Carolina.
Slowly realized that the chicks were not.
Charlie, still winter time, still dreary, you know. But it was very different because one of the things that I also thought about the U.S. prior to moving there was it was a melting pot, mm-hmm. right? And very soon it becomes apparent that racism is rife.
Mm-hmm.
And even within the black community, there is a lot of colorism mm-hmm. and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then as a as an African person,
mm-hmm.
you know, people have a certain image of you.
Mm-hmm.
They don't expect you to either speak English or speak mm-hmm. English fluently, you know, to even know what it's like to wear jeans or fancy cars. So you start dealing with all these dynamics
mm-hmm.
in college. And it hits you hard because here you are thinking, I'm going to a country where it's a melting pot and mm. I should be able to just fit in.
Mm.
But then you realize very quickly that you've got to figure out your own place in the system, how mm-hmm. you navigate the system, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not careful, you can just grab a lot of somebody else's baggage and make it yours,
mm.
right? So you've got to figure out pretty quickly how to define yourself
mm.
and still function within that system,
society.
Right? As an African male
yeah.
Operating in an American system, you know, how do you keep all your values that you were raised up with? How do you get rid of some or refine some? How
yeah.
do you add to that? You know, so it's yeah. it's an ongoing process,
mm-hmm.
learning process of who you are, where you want to see yourself or who you want to be.
Did you find it weird being called black or being put in a black category, or did you never get put in that category because you were African?
I think it was the first time really outside of brief stints in Europe
okay.
where I realized that I was actually black,
mm-hmm.
right? Because you grew up in Ghana, everybody for the most part is black,
yeah.
everybody you're hanging out with.
Yeah.
So it's not something you ever really think
yeah.
of, right?
Yeah.
And then you get to the US and you realize that you have to, or people expect you to kind of check a particular box, you know, pigeonhole yourself,
mm-hmm.
right? Because that's how the system is set up.
Mm-hmm.
It's based on stereotypes
mm-hmm.
and stuff. So, you know, you go to places and you realize, like the mall, cops are following you when you enter a store.
Yeah.
There are just certain things that become very apparent pretty
yeah.
quickly. And you're
yeah,
like,
yeah.
oh, shoot, I am black.
Yeah.
Okay, how does that affect who I am or who I think I am?
Yeah.
How do I fit into the system?
Yeah.
So it takes quite a bit.
So you have to really get to know yourself and figure out who you are and what you want to conform to or not conform to, or how you make
precisely.
Your own person.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Precisely. You have to quite do that. You know, I was fortunate. I met a bunch of, you know, Ghanaian guys, a couple of African chaps
mm.
who were older than me, a couple of years or a year ahead of me in college.
Mm.
So they'd been in the system a bit, knew
and
what it was like,
you.
And kind of guided me and say,
mm-hmm.
look, don't let some of these things bother you. Just
yeah.
figure out what works best
yeah,
for you.
Yeah.
And so that was, I'd say, reassuring in a way, you know, and gave me the kind of grounding I needed,
yeah.
knowing that there was a support system there
yeah.
to invariably become who I wanted to be type
yeah.
of thing
without
succumbing to pressure.
And then you get to New York. Are there chicks in New York?
Oh, Charlie, straight
did
up.
You put the chicks
straight
in
up,
New York?
I mean. Yeah, I mean, New York City.
You spent what? How many years in New York? 12?
I spent 12 years
12
in New
years
York.
In New York. I
yeah.
mean, once you got there out of college, was this like, oh, finally, the thing I've been waiting for?
Yeah, I mean, in college, you start seeing that lifestyle
yeah.
and stuff. New York was amazing.
Yeah.
It's one of those cities where there is something that suits everybody.
Yeah.
no matter
what. You felt like you could fit in. You could find your people.
You could find your people.
No matter where they were from.
No matter.
Yeah.
And New York also, because it's such a big city, allows you that level of anonymity, right? Unlike Accra, where everybody's up in your shit. New York, you're able to just be you, do whatever you want, explore. What makes you tick? What doesn't make you tick? You know, and that was the great thing about New York, from culture to anything and everything you could think of, it was there.
Yeah,
right. You could just conjure up shit.
Yeah, and you'd find it. And I think that's like, for who you are, that was really important to you, because being able to try different food, being able to push yourself, being able to navigate different cultures, understand different cultures, you know, just be open-minded and open your mind to just how people do things differently.
No, it was
so invaluable.
Yeah, invaluable and instrumental. I mean, especially if you're looking at the corporate world, right? Being able to navigate that system.
Yeah.
Especially with white people, because they are the majority, you know. How do you sit down and break bread with them, have a good conversation, be comfortable around people who don't come from the same background as you do, but also willing to push your own boundaries and learn different things, right? Yeah. So it's in New York City that my cousin Kuo and I and my brother Henry, we started drinking proper wine. In college, it was these...
it was Labrini or something.
Yeah, it was these small bottles of wine. It came in like a six-pack. I've forgotten the name now. And it was it was cheap wine,
course.
But in New York, you just started trying newer things.
Yeah.
We started eating sushi,
mm-hmm.
started going to, you know, cultural events, museums, the Philharmonic, just trying different things, park events, all sorts of things, just always trying to find new ways of doing things.
So when it came to then like dating, did you also have a similar approach of just, it wasn't, you know, you didn't have maybe in your mind, but you were just exploring?
Definitely more exploring. I mean, a lot of that, or the beginnings of that, was in the college days, right? Dating women from, because I was an international student, stayed in an international hall in college. And so you started meeting people from different parts of the world. So that was a really good thing. Just getting to hear people's stories and see how people did things.
Yeah.
But in New York, it was more like, all right, let's see what kind of works and doesn't work for me, right? So let's go out, have fun. Meet people. And I've always been, as you know, it's more organic with me, right? And I never go in thinking, oh, I'm going to date that person.
Yeah.
So it's like, meet a person, you strike up good conversation. Yeah. Hang out a few more times, and that's how it always was. So you were always meeting people that almost always did something that you didn't really know much about.
Yeah.
And it got you to challenge yourself, push yourself.
But you knew you didn't want to date Ghanaian girls.
Nah.
That was never really
not really the thing. I mean, you know, when
it's different.
Well, when we're growing up in Ghana, actually, I remember you meet some girl, you're chatting with her, you ask her, her name, she'll tell you Ama. Then later on, you run into Donald and you're chatting with Donald. You all met this girl, Ama, this, that. And Donald's like, are you sure? That girl, I'm telling you, her name is Issy. You're like, what the fuck? You know, there was always this dynamic. It was just very different, right?
It was... It didn't vibe with you.
It just seemed like just so much work, right?
Yeah.
And then you get to the US and you're just like, people are just cool with it. Like, let's just run with it and see how it pans out.
Yeah.
But there was that dynamic, but I also wanted to see what my comfort level was.
Yeah.
Right. And dating outside of the norm, if you will, people I knew what they're, because we all grew up in the same kind of society.
Yeah,
you know how your upbringing is pretty much the same.
Yeah.
You know, to try different things and see this works for me, that doesn't work for me. Oh, that's new. How do I approach it?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So it just helps you just become, or made me become a lot more open to certain things, certain conversations.
Yeah. And see the world differently, not be quick to judge or quick to assume or things like that. So you moved back to Ghana in March 2012. I always forget this.
Yeah.
Even though he reminds me all the time. He's like, you moved back in 2011. I moved back in 2012.
Yeah.
And so then you kind of come back to Ghana and completely opposite to New York. Because back then, too, it was like, that's when everyone was returning. That was like the swarm of the returnees. So we were all coming back and trying to figure things out and chill at Republic and back to small community. Because there were only, again, a few of us that were within the same.
Yeah.
I think that's the first time I saw Sam was at Republic.
Yeah, I remember that.
Still spotted him across the room. But yeah, so we met at Republic and then didn't see each other for a couple of years. But what was just navigating then being back in Ghana like, and then dating and not, again, it's not really your scene. So it's like,
yeah, I mean, when I got back, because I'd spent somewhat 18 years, close to 18 years in the US, doing my best really not to do anything that was remotely related to Ghana, Ghanaian, you know, my friends. I had a tight-knit group of Ghanaian friends that I'd grown up with, but try to just stay away from the whole Ghana bullshit. And then you get here and all of a sudden people want to try and tell you what to do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, been doing this shit for quite a while.
Yeah. You don't need to
tell me. Wheels haven't fallen off, so clearly I'm doing something right.
Yeah.
So that's when it dawned on me that in order to kind of maintain good practices, things that I like to do, I was going to have to stick to those things regardless of what, of where society or culture was trying to push me, right? So I'll show up in a family event if I want to.
Yeah.
Not because I feel obligated to. Yeah. I'll do things because I want to do them. It interests me. I feel intrigued.
Yeah.
There's some mutual benefit.
Yeah.
But none of this, oh, and I remember one time going somewhere, my younger brother Kobe says to me, you can't wear shorts. I'm like, can't wear shorts. Why? It's hot. He's like, but Ghana, we do. I said, fuck him. We're doing this. You know, you learn you have to start doing things certain in a way that works for you.
Yeah.
Otherwise, people are going to push you, you know, in a particular direction where you're going to become frustrated with the system and all that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. When I moved back, being in the UK, living in the UK, as you know, it's like, I didn't really ever feel like I fitted in. It was also my first sort of experience of being called black. Then you're navigating. Most of my friends were white. This was the most white friends I'd ever had because most of my friends were either black, mixed. You didn't really think about it. And then when it came to dating people there, I didn't really feel like they really, one, found me very attractive, or two, just connected with me on that level. So I was interestingly looking for someone who was connected to Ghana in some way. Mm. Which is quite opposite to your experience. So I was looking for that kind of like connected to Ghana. So I ended up having two relationships that were long distance and the person was in Ghana. And then I moved back and then you're navigating sort of Accra scene of being small and like, you know, just the whole thing. And then also it's when I realized that my identity as someone who was biracial or came from two different cultures was identified by the person that I was with, you know? So I would maybe date a Lebanese guy and then people would look at me and think, oh, who is she?
Yeah.
And maybe think I was of a poorer household or was looking for something or was looking for a green card. And you know, I was just sort of put in that kind of category. I slowly realized that I had to then be very strong also in my identity because otherwise, just like you said, like society will push you into kind of a way, you know, without you realizing it, and you have to claim your space. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you don't. So Sam and I got together in 2014. We've been together 9 years, and I think even though we've had the experience, you know, the experience before we met each other, as we started to date and spend more time together, we started to realize how other people started to relate with us, right? And, you know, I, again, with the experience of me being aware of how other people defined myself with being with someone, it was in our relationship that I started to realize how then people were defining you, depending on where we were, right? And I just wonder what that experience was like for you at the beginning, because I'm sure it's not something when you went in you expected to experience.
Well, no, you definitely didn't expect to experience it but it comes from a point of not knowing what it's like, right? I dated women from all different parts of the world and stuff, but that was in the US.
Yeah.
And then excuse me, when I started dating you, I think the first part really was just understanding what it was like for you as a mixed race person living in Ghana, right? Yeah. And the things that come with that, right? There are things that, you know, as a black person here, you just take for granted, right? Yeah. I show up in places, nobody questions my citizenship, right? Yes. They might ask, are you really Ghanaian? You're a bit Obroni or that kind of stuff, right? But nobody really questions whether I'm Ghanaian or not, right? For the most part. And you and I would go to places and people would start questioning the fact that you are Ghanaian, right? So I remember we were going to Zaina Lodge at Mole National Park.
I remember that.
And I think you took either your passport.
My passport, yeah.
And I said, why are you taking your passport?
You're like, we're going in Ghana.
Yeah, you don't understand what I have to deal with.
Yeah.
And we get to Mole National Park and they're counting the number of Ghanaians and foreigners, and you get lumped in the foreigners part, right? And they're like, no, no, she's Ghanaian. And the guy's, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
Right? So you had to pull out your passport in order to actually prove that you're Ghanaian, right? And ever since then, there are things where people ask you, you know, so which are your parents is Ghanaian?
Yeah.
And when it's your father, it's okay. Yeah. If it were your mother, then
like
it's
odd.
A bit, right? So just learning that in itself.
Yep.
Of what it is to be a mixed race person, not that I know it in its entirety, but operating, living in Ghana,
and what comes constantly with it, justifying yourself.
Right, and what comes with it was the first part, right? And then realizing how people then also treat you or treat me, right? So, you know, I remember a former colleague saying to me, the only reason why you can date somebody like her is because you have money, right? And then you're just
That stuff was so bizarre to me because I'm like, but what does that say about, also what does that say about me?
You,
like,
right?
as the assumptions of a mixed race person, like that they are people who just generally will choose people who have money or need to be looked after, like the definition of that. And it's so, where does that come from?
A lot of it, you know, when people don't understand others, we tend to foist these notions onto them, right?
Yeah.
And it's a way of us dealing with our insecurities, right? So if you look at the US where black people are treated in a particular manner by, you know, whites or what have you, it's because you're thinking you're threatened.
Yeah.
So let me just foist these notions onto them to validate the things that I do to them, right?
Yeah.
So growing up, you know, you hear, oh, mixed race girls are loose, or people who go to GIS are this and that. All these things that we come up with, right? Because we feel some level of, you know, we feel threatened in a bit, or we just haven't taken the time to understand a person or persons, that kind of stuff. And that's where a lot of that emanates from, right?
Yeah.
Is people not really sitting down to do that?
Because it's something that, like, when we travel, especially when we travel around Ghana, like you said, when we went to Zaina, and then also when, even sometimes we're just going to restaurants, and, like, Sam and I are driving in the car, and if, let's say, I'm sitting next to him, sometimes they'll think he's the driver until, like, he gets out, right? And it's like, if you don't notice it in the relationship where you're not self-aware, it can become something that, like, can easily break down a relationship, I feel. Like, depending on the kind of strength you have or the kind of conversations you have. Luckily, you and I notice it and be like, ah, did you notice that this person did this? And be like, why? And then we'll try and, like, always kind of flip it or be there to kind of counter it in some way or do our own thing that kind of counters what people then think. Or I remember you saying to me how you'd go into certain restaurants on your own and get a certain service. But then when we go together, you would get a completely different service. Yeah. And I was like, what? Because I hadn't really noticed it. So now I had to become aware of that so that it also buttressed you. You have to sort of, in different scenarios, supports the other person because it's really, it's so subtle.
Not always.
Not always.
Not always subtle. Because I remember, you know, going somewhere with you and there was a bunch of us guys and you were standing next to me and this lady comes up and she says hi to everybody else, skips you, moves on to the next guy,
I remember that
kind of stuff. And I remember having some.
That is not subtle at all.
Yeah, that's not subtle at all, you know. And my buddy Yao saying some of the women, you know, do stuff like that because mm-hmm. they don't consider you to be one of them.
Yeah.
Right. So it's getting to learn these things. Yeah. And I see the flip side of it, you mm-hmm. know, when I'm hanging out with some of your friends, mm-hmm. you know, who just look at me as an outsider for whatever reason. And there are those who will interact with me only when you're around.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I have to literally say, hey, remember me, Francis's husband? You know, I'm like, fuck it, I'm not doing this shit anymore.
No. Which is fair, completely fair.
You know, so.
But and I think it's like how we navigate in each other's circles, right? Because you have your guys and they have a certain sort of understanding. And then there's my sort of mm-hmm. group, so to say, and they have their sort of experience. And it's just how we also let each other know, like, hey, when I was in this situation, did you notice that this happened?
Yeah.
Or like, what makes me laugh the most is that everyone thinks I'm your side chick, which is cool. Because it's like, they don't really think that you would be married to me. They just kind of think that like, you've brought your side chick to an event. Do you know what I mean? And sometimes I find it really funny because it happened once when we went to this funeral. The guy was like, you know, said hi to you and then kind of said hi to me. And then you were like, oh, this is my wife. And he's like, oh, hi. Like it changes the whole way that they interact with me. So I know when they think I'm side chick and then because it's usually in that moment where you introduce me as your wife and then they're like, oh, my God. Like in their minds, their mind is just blown.
Yeah, and there are those who come and they like effusively congratulating me, like because they know you and they've met me in some circumstance. Oh, Charlie, like they're just impressed. I'm like, they're like, oh, he could actually score a woman like her. I'm like, wow, what do you think of me? Like, you know, but it's just one of those things that you find ways of navigating. And I think the thing that, as you mentioned earlier, is we let each other know when there's something odd that happens. And we stay in each other's corner, right? So you always know that if an issue is raised, mm-hmm. it's not going to be dismissed. You know, there's that level of empathy there.
Definitely.
You know? So that definitely helps.
Because that's a big thing. Because I think, like you said, constantly have to, for myself, constantly having to justify being Ghanaian. So there's certain circumstances where I automatically feel quite uncomfortable or know that I'm automatically an outsider because mm-hmm. you don't see. There are quite a lot. I remember you saying to me, like, you'd never seen so many mixed race people in Ghana till you started hanging out with me. Because it's not like we're all just, like, everywhere. It's like, there's a lot of us, but very much in our sort of various corners.
You have to be.
And then we find each other. We have our communities where we kind of, you know, relate.
You have to find your own people. Because more often than not, our society can be very, very harsh, not mm-hmm. as welcoming. You know, and what I realize with a lot of mixed race children is it's usually the mother is not Ghanaian.
Yeah.
Right. So and for the most part, the Ghanaian society mm-hmm. doesn't embrace the mothers when they come in.
Yeah.
Right. So you find that you have a lot of non-Ghanaian mothers who have found their support system.
Yeah.
And so you've got
my mom.
A lot of mixed race kids growing up together because that's their support system.
Yep.
Because when they came in, we didn't allow them
to just be
and you know, weren't always welcoming and some of the comments made and stuff like that. So
definitely. And I think it's what speak to some of my other friends and like who are also with Ghanaian men mm-hmm. and just what navigating that, and we have similar experiences, but then sometimes on the flip side, a friend of mine is dating someone who's or married to someone who's Lebanese, and then you know people think she's the nanny, you know, and it's like opposite experiences, and to constantly be having to live that kind of justification or constantly mm-hmm. to be aware of that, I think is something that a lot of people think that because they put you on a bit of a pedestal for whatever reason, mm-hmm. Which you don't necessarily ask for, but it is there. So how do you then, one, use that privilege or one, be aware of that sort of pedestal to say, okay, if this is where you're going to put me, then I'm going to make sure that you know that this is not okay or this is how to change it or this is how to navigate it, but also to have the support so that when it isn't so easy to do that, you know, you've got people that have, like you said, that have your back or, and sort of supporting you to sort of navigate that process. Were there any other things? Are there any other things that cross your mind when you think about that? When you think about our relationship or like other people's perspective of us or anything like that?
I mean, I'm sure in the beginning there was a whole bunch, you know, but over time you just kind of learn to just tune it out.
Yeah.
Definitely. And just operate, navigate, do what you need to do.
Yeah.
A lot like living in the US, right? Mm. Knowing you're black and knowing that in a lot of places that you're going to go to, you're going to be the only black person or amongst a few black people, but not letting that impact your experience.
Yeah. Yes.
So you keep forging ahead, you know. Yeah. They tell you in some places you're not welcome, subtle or unsubtle, you know. But you keep pushing ahead. You don't let it affect what you're trying to do and your perception of life and how you want to experience certain things. And it's the same thing, you know. Yeah, there are instances that might just jump out for whatever reason. But for the most part, it's now become one of those things where
I think we laugh about it more than
Laugh about it, or sometimes we don't even realize it or recognize it and just keep doing our thing. And there's always going to be somebody who's got something to say, right?
Yeah.
I always say, even Mother Teresa had detractors.
Yeah.
Somebody somewhere is just going to be
hating,
rankled by it, upset by it, won't understand it.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Definitely. I think also there's the interesting thing of like cultural difference, right? As much as we are both Ghanaian, we've also both had to understand, like I've had to understand your way of thinking from an American perspective, or just how America influenced your way of thinking. And then sort of my UK experience, and then fused with a Ghana experience, and my mum's upbringing and my dad's upbringing, just that way of thinking and how we fuse that together in an interrelation. Because I think people don't really also sometimes understand, like, even within your relationship, there's not only are you two different people, but culturally there's things that are different, you know. And that could be from a Ghanaian who's grown up in the UK to a Ghanaian that grew up in the US. Culturally, you'll be quite different, right? It's not always about where you're from. It's sometimes just about the environment that you've also
grown up
in, and things
and the
like
household.
That.
I remember my mom telling both of us about how when her and my dad got married, and her first birthday whilst they were married, where he didn't celebrate it at all, and she was just like miffed at the whole situation, but realized he came from a household where they didn't really celebrate birthdays right? So it's those kind of things that over time you just realize, there's the cultural element, there's the upbringing element, you know, the things that you value I might not put a premium on, and vice versa, right? So how do you over time to try and find that common ground and make sure that you're not dismissive of those things that resonate or mean a lot to
someone
the
else,
other person, and those kind of things.
Yeah, definitely. I agree. But I think that's like, for me, the main point of this was to just touch on that experience, because I think it's to bring it to light and give some light to it, because there are a lot of people I know in interracial relationships, whether the girl is Ghanaian or the man is Ghanaian, and then the partner is mixed, and just what that kind of experience is like. So thank you for agreeing to do this and for sharing your experience and for being on the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I finally made it. Been apprehensive about doing this, but no, it's been a lot of fun.
It's been good. It's been good fun.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.